history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some men and women around you who have incredible stories to tell, ordinary Americans who have done extraordinary things, and it's our privilege to meet them each week. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation, like the story we're going to hear today in Fort Collins, Colorado, from Mike Martinez, just turned 92 years old. He's a Colorado native, but Fort Collins is a big city compared to where you grew up. I asked you where your hometown was. You said there wasn't even a town. You're just out in the middle of nowhere?
That is correct. The Dunner Disappointment is what the area was called.
Disappointment. Now, that's encouraging.
Yes, and the Dunner. I mean, there ain't nothing there, and there hasn't been nothing there but I don't know. There may be something there because I haven't been there for a while. I left there in the 40s and ain't been back because there was nothing, really nothing, you know, and all my friends had moved out. So that's about it for that part of the country as far as I know.
You were the second of seven children in your family. So what was that childhood like out there in the middle of nowhere? What kinds of stuff did you do?
Oh, we played out on the farm. You know, actually, we didn't really play. We had to farm. We had to work. As we grew up, we done a lot of work in the farm, and naturally that helped our parents. We raised some cows, and we had to take care of them crazy cows, and therefore, you know, you got your horses and worked with them, and you made sure the horses and the cows ate and got up every morning, especially in the wintertime, and fed your cows. And it's kind of nice getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to feed a crazy cow. But we had, I guess it was great to do that. No, we had a lot of fun.
Did you have to milk them too?
No, that's too many to milk. We was only playing with 1,000 cows, and then I don't think you could milk that many. But we did have a milk cow, yes. And sometimes, yes, we took turns milking that to have milk at the house. And, you know, you had your own cream there, and everything was done at home. You bought very little stuff at the time because it took you a couple of days to go to the store because there was no car in the neighborhood. And I remember back in the 30s, my dad bought a car. We was going to have it made, so he parked it. He cranked on that crazy thing one winter, all winter. Never got it started till summer come. So he jumps in the car and takes off uptown. Guess what? He didn't come back in a car. He come back on a horse. So that's the last car we had till in the late 30s or early 40s is when we finally got another vehicle. It was something else. And I'll never forget. He bought a brand new pickup and he paid $700 for it. And today, you can't believe that. That you bought a vehicle for that kind of money.
But back then, that was a ton of money.
Oh, you bet. See, gold was, $30 an ounce. And look at the price of gold today. But yeah, it was great living that kind of life, I guess, because you kept busy. And today's life is a lot different in a way, but in a way, it's still the same. You still got to go out there and work for what you got.
Well, and your job after the war would be in mining. But yes, growing up as a kid out there in western Colorado, do you remember having some hopes, some dreams, some ideas of what you were going to do someday?
Yes, I did. I decided I'd go to college, and finally I did. And I went to college to become an electronic engineer and worked on a broadcast station and for a couple of them, and away we went. But the mining, I took mining when I first got out of service because there's no work and you couldn't get any money. So we were standing in the corner one day, and an old friend of mine come up and wanted to know what we was doing. We told him, he said, "Well, why don't you guys go to work in the mines? They paid big money." And we did. Went over there, we got a job, and we were happy with that for a while. So we were happy campers working around Telluride there in the mines. It was pretty good. There was a lot of work. You could quit one shift and go to another one the same day. That's just how scary. Because it's pretty dangerous work in the mines. A lot of people got killed. But, you know, it's just one of them things you got to put up with. And life is that way, just like driving a car here in town. A lot of people get killed driving a car, and mining was no different, as I consider it. But it was a dangerous job, but the money was good. There was no place else that made that kind of money, so we were happy campers digging for gold over there and had a great time.
Well, and you talk about dangerous jobs. There's no more dangerous time in your life than being in Bastogne during the Battle of the Bulge, and we're going to hear about that. But I want to ask you about something else first. Seems like everybody who was alive on December 7th, 1941, has some kind of memory about how that word came to them. Do you remember how you found out about Pearl Harbor?
We was sitting at the house. Dad heard it first. Her mother heard it, don't remember which one, and let us know that the Pearl Harbor had been hit. Because, see, if it wasn't out early in the morning, you didn't hear it, because we were never at home. Mother was the only one at home, and we were all out working the fields and taking care of what had to be done. So she was the first one that heard it, and she let us know when we come to lunch. And then I thought it was pretty rough, but I never thought of going to the surface at the time. Why, I do not know, but later on I did, and I went, didn't volunteer. I could have got what they call a deferment, but I did not want a deferment. I volunteered, and I thought I was never going to live that down. I thought Mother was going to kill me, but she didn't. I managed to survive, and I come home and told her what I'd done, and that was something else. You know, tell your mother, well, I just joined the service and took my basic training in California. And guess who I took my basic training? As a neighbor there was old Red Skelton. Many people remember him, many don't, because he's gone now. He's been gone for a while. But we had a lot of fun, and he was a good guy to get along with.
So a lot of things I want to ask you about here. So first of all, you said you could have had a deferment, and so people understand. Was that because of the farming operation, because you guys were growing things that were needed?
Yes, that is because of kind of the farming and, you know, things needed to be taken care of, and we were raising what the public wanted out there. So I could have got a deferment without any problem at all. Mm-hmm. But Dad didn't dig it up, and my mother didn't push on it too hard, I guess. And they let me go and do what I wanted. So I thought that was great.
So where did that come from? Where did that idea to go sign up and knowing your mom's going to be mad at you? What got into you?
Because a lot of your friends around were gone. You know, all the boys in the country left about that time. The country was getting very thin on boys. There was very few of them left. There was all, you become of age, you was gone. Even the married ones were gone. And Dad was a World War I vet, so he didn't worry too much about it because he was disabled, and he got to stay home. He didn't have to worry about going to war on World War II. I understand a few people did, but my dad did not. He stayed home and helped us take care of things, and he did die at an early age. He was in his 40s when he passed away.
Did he ever tell you anything about what he did in World War I?
No, he didn't talk too much about that. It's like we are today. We don't tell our kids much. Why, I do not understand. I can talk to a stranger and tell him what went on, yes, but talk to your kids, that's a whole different ballgame. Some of them will dig it out of you, yes, but a lot of them don't.
Well, when you set the example by telling your story, it helps others to tell theirs, so I'm glad we're having this conversation today. So you go sign up, they send you out to California. Where in California was your basic training?
Camp Roberts. Can't remember the name of the town.
Paso Robles and Red Skelton, but he wasn't Red Skelton yet, right?
Yes, he was.
He was famous already.
He was already famous, and he was something else. Every time he drew the extra duty, he'd hire somebody to do it for him, and away he'd go, you know, because he had the money. The rest of us was broke, per se, because we got big money at the time, you know. We got 50 cents a day. Can you imagine drawing 50 cents a day today?
Yeah, good luck with that. Was he entertaining the rest of you guys? Was he cracking jokes and doing funny stuff, or what?
A lot of times he did, yes, but he was just a regular guy to get along with. He was not a bad guy. And after we separated there, he used to write to all his friends there, and I used to get some letters from him, but we never replied. Why, I do not know, because we could have his signature down there in a lot of letters, you know, that he wrote. And it would have been great, but we didn't save the letters or anything. Mainly, I guess, especially when we hit Europe, because we didn't have a place to store anything. We just threw everything in the wayside. That was one thing, and I wish I'd have at least one letter from him, but I don't.
But you still have the memories, and I did look up some info on Red Skelton's time in the Army. He'd been a radio and film star before the war, And after that training that he had with Mike, Skelton spent so much time entertaining the troops that he actually wore himself out. He did sometimes as many as 10 1.5-hour shows a day for servicemen on troop ships going back and forth to Europe. He ended up with a nervous breakdown and developed a severe stuttering issue. Red Skelton actually ended up at an Army hospital in Virginia trying to recover. And while he was there, he met a wounded soldier whose plight was so jarring that Skelton just had to find a way to make him laugh and take that soldier's mind off the pain and suffering. That effort to make another soldier's life better ended up curing Red Skelton of his stutter and helped him get back to work as an entertainer. So for you, you do your basic training out there, and there are a lot of different things that you can do in the Army. Was there something that you were hoping they would let you do?
Well, not really, because they don't. Only thing you knew you was going to do is kill that dude across the street, you know. It was very rough. So I dropped a 50 caliber machine gun, and I guess I enjoyed it, but no, not really, because the Germans liked it too well and took two or three of them away from us. And that's the way it was, you know.
What about, it strikes me as I'm just listening to what you've shared already, growing up in rural western Colorado, where when you guys finally got a car, it didn't even work that well, and your dad comes home riding a horse. So to be in the Army and to have all these Jeeps and trucks and tanks and all these things around, was that like a kid in a candy store or what?
Oh, you bet. It was something else. And everybody wanted to drive, but we didn't all get a chance to drive. And I was one of the guys that really didn't get a chance to drive. But they did treat us pretty well about that. Every place we went, you know, we didn't have to walk. And the infantry did. We done a lot of riding. And sometimes we regretted it because, you know, especially when we got to hit France there and up through the bulge there, the Germans loved to see them convoys coming up because they'd really clean them out.
Well, and before you ever got there, you had a long journey. And I imagine for, again, a guy who grew up where you did, the way you did, getting on a ship and heading overseas had to be something new.
Oh, it was. And that ship we went in was a Queen Mary, which, you know, is a little one. That thing is a pretty good-sized boat. And how many people they put in there was unbelievable, but the only room we had was standing room. That's just how crowded it was. And we went on a big convoy, and we took extra time because we went one way and then back the other way. And in the mornings, every once in a while, you'd see one of the ships over there smoking. The Germans got to it and hit it. And I do know that there was a few times we went up there to the rail ready to jump off the boat and take off out in the middle of the ocean. Now, that'd have been something, you know. I'm glad I didn't get to do that. It was quite an experience to get out there and get ready to bail the boat.
Because there were submarines in the area and you thought you were going to be hit?
That is correct. There was a lot of submarines in the area. That's how come you'd get up in the morning and see some smoking ships out there and in the edge of our convoy. Because it's a pretty good-sized convoy. We went one direction one day and another direction the other day, because they wanted to confuse the Germans and not let them know where we were going. But more or less, they had to know because, Europe and Japan are two big different directions.
Yeah, and you're talking about that zigzag pattern to foil the subs, and thankfully you guys did make it. And I know this is 72 years ago, so it's kind of hard to remember. But do you recall what your expectations were? I mean, did you really think that you'd be coming back to Colorado after you were done over there?
Really? I did not know. Really, I thought I might be laying there with the rest of some of the gang that we went with, because I mean to tell you, you got up some mornings and all you could see was bodies laying all over the yards. It was something else, especially when we hit there after D-Day. The bodies that was out there in the mornings when you see men, it was pathetic. There was hundreds of dead people out there, Americans and Germans.
And that's really the first thing you saw when you landed in Normandy? I mean, this is a little while after D-Day, but you still saw the remnants of that?
Oh, yes, because, see, the Germans were trying to hold it very strongly, and we were trying to take it very strongly. So we lost a lot of troops there. The Germans lost their share, and we lost our share. So it was more or less an equal balance, but the Americans won, and I'm glad they did, or I would have never come back. I really don't know how to explain it till you got up. You went out there and all you seen was bodies laying over there for I don't know how many yards. And naturally, we had to go over there and search. We would say for other things, but we had to go over there and search for guns. We didn't want to leave any guns in there because we didn't know what civilians were still strongly for the German side, and they would get the guns and shoot us with them. So we went over there and policed the area for guns. And that's why instead of any other souvenir, we were out there especially looking for guns. We had to collect all the, because there were a lot of handguns and stuff like that. We had, I guess, more or less protect ourselves. So that's why we had that.
So this is really your first duty in Europe, is to go through the lines and lines of dead bodies and see if there are any guns left. That's the first thing you had to do?
No, we had to defend the area first. And then, you know, but when we got up in the mornings, we would see what was out there. And any time it was possible, you did go search the dead bodies for guns, because them guns were going to be, if they were left there, they were going to be used on you. So you had to, you know, kind of eliminate the guns, because the Germans supposedly was not selling any more guns. So the ones that you got would be off of the dead bodies out there.
So you're a 19-year-old kid, and you're seeing all this, death all around you. How did you handle that?
That's a tough one to explain. I just don't know how. Actually, I was not 19 years old yet, because I had served all my duties and everything, and I was home when, by the time I was 21. I had my birthday at the age of 21 back in the good old USA. Mama cooked my birthday lunch, and I was a happy camper. Uh-huh. So I was pretty young. I kind of snuck out and volunteered before my age, and that's the reason my mother was ready to hang me when she found out about that. But I'm glad I got away from her, and she never did.
You mentioned that birthday lunch. What's a birthday lunch from Mama Martinez look like? What did she cook for you?
She cooked a big old cake and stuff like that, you know. And naturally, in my bringing up, we had steak about every day. Steak and beans was the main course. Well, we had little potatoes with it, you know. Uh-huh. And it was great. It was something you really enjoyed. But that cake made the day.
But you had to get through a lot to be home for that 21st birthday, and that's what I want to hear about. And I want to understand what your duties were. So you're in a field artillery battalion. What kind of gun were you operating?
A 50-caliber machine gun.
Okay, we're going to get more into that when we come back. 92-year-old Mike Martinez of Fort Collins, Colorado, is our guest. You're going to find photos of him then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.